Again, we can start with a short mindful breathing exercise, followed by cultivating good intentions. Try to keep your back straight and make yourself relaxed, comfortable. And feel the weight of your body on cushions, on chair. And observe the breath mindfully as you inhale and exhale normally. Once your mind has been settled down, then we can think, may us coming together to listen and to engage in discussion and reflect and contemplating. May all of these become cause and conditions to have that imprint in our mind and understanding of the true truth. May we call on conditions to cultivate, develop the wisdom, realizing the true truth, as well as the compassion, the bodhicitta mind. Through having cultivated the wisdom and compassion, may we be able to help benefit more and more sentient beings. May we always be helpful and beneficial to others. And even when we are not being able to help and be benefit, may we never harm and hurt others knowingly, intentionally. May our act of listening and so forth become cause and condition to achieve our highest potential, the fully awakened state, so we can fulfill higher purpose of self and all other sentient beings. Okay, then refuge in bodhicitta prayer. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Self. By the merits of prayer to listen to the Dharma, I am become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Sangye Chodam Sogye Chodam La Chan Chupa Dunda Ni Kapsuji Dadi Chenche Kimbe Sonam Ki Rala Penje Sangye Rupa Sho Sangye Chodam Sogye Chodam La Chanjo Bato Dhani Kapsu Che Dagi Shushche Gimbe Sonam Ki Rola Penche Sangye Rola Shu Kongye Duje Nye Lone Ta Odom Je Kongbe Se Tambe Chuni Chun Ye Be Godom De La Chan Sa Lo. So, good evening everyone, and thank you for coming, joining today. The topic of the, as you know, of the subjects for today and tomorrow is the true truth. The true truth are very important to understand in order to understand the four truth better, and as well as the whole path of the path better, and especially in Mahayana and Madhyamika, the middle way school, they pay much emphasis on the true truth. And those Madhyamikas, as Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, and so forth, their presentations of the true truth understanding is based on some of the sutras, you know. So I thought maybe I might read a little bit of that, can be helpful. In the sutra of the meeting of father and son, where it is mentioned, you know, Tathagata's understanding relies the conventional truth and ultimate truth, those two truths, and also the knowledge of object of knowledge are also two only. The object of knowledge or to know is the conventional and ultimate truth. In the Tathagata Bhagavan, you know, understand the emptiness, understand greatly, understand completely, therefore is the omniscient in that sutra, okay? And then there it says the conventional is that the Tathagata sees, or the conventional is the object of the ordinary beings, and ultimate is unexpressible, cannot be known, cannot be understood, cannot be completely understood. So that is in that sutta it says about those who are truth. And again, you know, we will come later, but when here it says the ultimate truth, the emptiness is cannot be expressless. The way it can be experienced directly with the direct perception cannot be expressed by word fully. In the same way, the way that ultimate reality or truth is experienced by direct perception cannot be understood or known by conceptual thoughts, conceptual minds. So that is what it means. And then also in that same sutras, you know, it mentions, you know, the wise one of the world, you know, you understood the true truth by yourself, by your own power, without having to learn from others. In other sutras, you know, Lodi Misebedo, you know, that is the part of the third turning of the Wheel of Dharma. There is true truth, the conventional and ultimate truth, there is no third truth. And there are two truths. What are those two truths? It's the conventional truth, ultimate truth. The conventional truth is presenting in the time, such as this is this is the truth of suffering, this is the truth of origination, this is the truth of cessation, this is the truth of the path, or the conventional truth, the letters, the sounds, and all others, that is explained through the terms and the words. And what is the ultimate truth? Again, similar like the previous ones, of course in a different sutra, but it is same. It is something that cannot be expressed. It's something beyond the sorrow. Why is that? Because it is the suchness of phenomena all the time. It's always same all the time. The nature of that ultimate truth or reality is, you know, unchanging. And for Bodhisattvas, by having shown the relative truth, they don't get discouraged. They don't get discouraged because they understand the ultimate truth directly, also they don't fall, and they will help to ripen the sentient beings. And such is the bodhisattvas who are wise or expert on the truth. In another, the Buddha said, there are two divisions of the truth, you know, relative and conventional. Conventional truth is the truth of ordinary, and ultimate truth is beyond the ordinary. So there are many reference that you find in sutras, different sutras. These all are in different sutras about Buddha explaining about two truths. Based on those, then the Nalanda's masters, the great Nalanda masters, scholars, especially the Madhyamikas, then their presentations of the basis is based on those two truths, and they emphasize very much on those truths. They present from the foundation of those two truths. In similar, you know, on the base of that, then Nagarjuna in his fundamental treatise or the root of the wisdom, you know, he said, whatever Buddha's taught, whatever teaching Buddha gave, they all are founded on the true truth. And those are the conventional truth and ultimate truth. Whoever do not understand those two, division of the true truth, they do not understand the profound suchness that Buddha taught. And then there is no way to present the ultimate truth without depending on the presentation of conventional truth. And without understanding the ultimate truth, there is no way one can achieve liberations. So Nagarjuna made clear in as the importance of understanding the ultimate truth in order to free from the samsara, from the sorrow and the sufferings. And in order to understand ultimate truth correctly, also one need to understand the conventional reality or the truth. Without understanding the conventional reality correctly, one cannot have a understanding of ultimate truth correctly. Without understanding of ultimate truth correctly, also one wouldn't have understanding of conventional truth correctly. And in order to understand correctly each of them, it depends on the others to understand correctly. So therefore, the understanding of conventional relative truth is important as the understanding of ultimate reality is important. Sometimes we think ultimate reality is something that we need to understand, but conventional reality is something that it feels like maybe is not as so important. Similarly, you know, one of the great Nalanda masters, you know, Lobin Shinyingbo, also he said, you know, whoever understand the true truth, that person is not ignorant to the Buddha's teachings. And since they are not ignorant to the Buddha's teachings, then they will continue to accumulate merits. And through that, then one will reach the state beyond the state of perfections. So again, here emphasize the understanding of true truth, and especially conventional truth. If you understand the conventional truth, then you will engage into the practice, such as you understand the importance of practice of generosity, moral discipline, you know, patience, meditative concentration, and all of that. And one will engage in all these other practices, not just focus just the wisdom, but other practices. And through having focus in both wisdom and other practices, then one will be able to achieve the highest state of perfection, fully enlightened state. Also, you know, Chandragiri say, you know, similarly, you know, the conventional truth is the method, and the ultimate truth is that arise from that method. And whoever do not understand those two, you know, will be led in the wrong directions by the ignorance. So, I just wanted to kind of touch a little bit on that, just to give the where those teachings come from and the importance those masters, the importance they pay on understanding the true truth. Also, you know, the purpose of the Mahayana practitioners, you know, those who are bodhisattvas or those who are inclined to bodhisattvas path. Even maybe we are not bodhisattva, but we have the interest and inclinations towards that path, inspirations towards those path. You know, for those, then the ultimate goal is to achieve fully awakened state, fully enlightened state, so that we can be greatest benefit to all sentient beings, including oneself. And in order to be greatest benefit and to fulfill others' highest purpose or one purpose, then one needs to achieve the union of the two kayas, the two bodies, of Dharmakaya and Rupakaya. Dharmakaya fulfills one's perfect purpose, highest purpose, and through the Rupakaya, then it fulfills others' highest purpose, you know. So, through that wisdom, Dharmakaya, then one is able to eliminate all the obscurations and to able to achieve all the highest positive qualities, inner qualities. And by having purify all the obscurations that need to be purified, that need to be eliminated, so there is nothing to be eliminated. And having achieved all the inner quality that need to be achieved, there is no more to achieve anything. There is no more to abandon anything, there is no more to achieve anything. And through that, then one is able to fulfill one's higher purpose. Through that, in order to fulfill others' purpose, the way the bodhisattvas, the Buddhas, the way they help and benefit others in a high level is by showing them the path, how to eliminate their own afflictive emotions, how to actualize those inner positive qualities within themselves. That is what their focus. Because that is, you know, those afflictive emotions, because are the root of all the sufferings. Unless one is able to free from that, even no matter how much we try to help, it's only temporary help. It's never ending help. But if you can help them to overcome their own afflictive emotions, delusions, then you have been able to help them permanently not to suffer anymore. You know, and same, you know, even though we can help to provide temporary relief here and there, but again, you know, temporary relief for one day, for 1 week, 1 month, we help to relieve one problem, another problem arises. We try to help that relieve, another problem arises. There's no end, you know. And in terms of happiness, you know, even we try to help them to have certain level of happiness, joy, but again, Those are temporary. It's gone. You can make them happy for 1 second, or maybe a few minutes, few days, few. But again, you know, but if we can help them to achieve those inner positive qualities, then they can find permanent happiness. Once they find permanent happiness, and therefore that is the main focus of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of helping benefit sentient beings. And the way to help is by showing the path. And in order to show the path, since the sentient beings cannot have access to Dharmakaya wisdom directly, so then the Buddha manifests in Rupakaya, the form bodies. Through the form bodies, the Rupakaya, Rupa means form, manifesting in different forms, and through that manifestation, then they teach, guide, and show the path how to do that. And that is the how to be help and benefit to others. As in one of the sutra, Buddha himself said, you know, I cannot relieve your pain and suffering, just like if you are being pricked by some kind of thorn. If you take away thorn, then you are being relieved of that pain from the dead thorn. I cannot take away your suffering like that. I cannot wash your all negativities, negative karma and so forth, just as I can help you to take a bath and, you know, help clean the physical strains. Nor I can transfer my realizations to you, just as we might be able to pass my cup to you. Or, you know, but then how can I help you? I can help you by showing the path. Path to freedom from the samsara and the suffering and the cause of the suffering, the delusions. That is how I can help you. That's what Buddha said, you know, that is how I can help you. And so Buddha said, I can only show you the path, whether you are able to free from the samsara or not and achieve liberation or not, now is in your hand. It's like, you know, give you an example. It is the doctor can diagnose your problems, illness correctly, and they might be able to diagnose, prescribe the right medication. But if you don't take the medicine, then there's nothing the doctor can do. They have diagnosed the exact problem. They have prescribed the exact cure medications. But for some reason, if you do not take those medicine, those cure, then you cannot cure. In same way, you know, Buddha understood what is the, was able to diagnose what the root of our problem, our suffering, pain, and he prescribed right medication, right practice, path. And so now whether you are able to free from that and cure from that, it depends on yourself, whether you actually practice or not. And that is what Buddha says. So that is where I'm coming. In order to be benefit to oneself and others, in order to fulfill the higher purpose of oneself and others, one need to achieve those two kayas, the union of two kayas. In order to achieve those two kayas, then you need to create the right cause and conditions to achieve those two kayas. And that is the wisdom and the method. That is the wisdom and the method. The wisdom, the practice of wisdom, the path of the wisdom is the cause of Dharmakaya wisdom. And the practice of, you know, the method, the merit and the method is the cause of Rupakaya. Without those two causes, one cannot achieve the union of two bodies. If one of them is missing, then you cannot achieve. you need the board. And in order to practice the method and the wisdom and perfect and complete those practice, then it depends on the basis, the two truth. Conventional truth and ultimate truth. So therefore, that is why on the basis, on the very basis, there's two truth, conventional and ultimate truth. On the base on that, then there is the path, you know, of the method through the conventional truth, depending on conventional truth, and the wisdom that is related and dependent on the ultimate truth. And because of the path of method and wisdom, then there is the two body. And because there are two bodies, then one is able to fulfill the higher purpose of others in oneself. So that is also why such giving such much, the truth of the giving such an importance. And you know, in the Buddhist, the term of two truth is term that has been used by all the Buddhist school of thought. But especially the Madhyamikas, you know, especially Madhyamika emphasized very much on presentation on the base on two truths. It's very much so there are four school of thoughts, and each presentation of a true truth get more and more refined and more subtle. And so all of schools, all of those schools present the true truth. You know, each of them have presentation on their true truth. But when we study, then we can see how each of those true truth presentation, each of them get more and more kind of refined and more subtle. So how understanding of earlier truth help to the understanding or presentation of true truth, the next school of thoughts. According to the Bhavasika school of thoughts, their presentation of relative and ultimate or absolute truth is, you know, anything that can be destroyed by smashing, for example, smashing the pot by the hammers, you know. So in sense where you can kind of break in the pieces and parts, you know, in terms of physical matters, then you know you can kind of break, or you can dissect into smaller and more parts and like that. Anything that can be done are relative truth. For non-physical, in terms of mind, consciousness, even though we cannot destroy and kind of, you know, break into pieces and parts, but mentally, you know, you can break down from moment to moment, you know, that moment into more part of the moment and parts in that way. And so those are the known as the relative. And then whether it's a physical matter, where it comes so small that you cannot break anymore into two pieces. You cannot break anymore into two pieces. You cannot smash into more pieces anymore. So they're called partless particles. That one's the ultimate. And that one's the basis for all others. the partless particles, you know, is the basis for all other growth, mass, you know, and so that is the ultimate or absolute. And same with consciousness, the consciousness can be breaking to a moment by moment in a small moment, and then it comes to a point where it's so small, the moment is so small, you cannot break into any more than one moment anymore. You cannot dissect it, say, oh, there's two moments from there. After, and that is partless consciousness. More. And that one is again ultimate. And then all other moments of consciousness, feeling, emotions, whatever that comes from coming together, many of those moments is the relative. So, you know, without going much detail, that is more or less a little bit of presentation. And then next school of thought, you know, the school of the Sutta, Sotandaka, all the impermanent phenomena, all the conditioned phenomena, you know, that has their own unique functionings, ultimate unique functionings, you know, are known as the relative, you know, whereas all phenomena, you know, who doesn't have same functionings like those, the ultimate functioning, just like those impermanent or conditional phenomena, you know, such as the, you know, permanent phenomena, then they are presented as the absolute, you know, the absolute, the unchanging permanent phenomena, you know, and that doesn't have, you know, same functioning like a unique individual functioning with others, impermanent phenomena, which does not have that, you know, then those are ultimate reality. And both of them, you know, accepts inherent existence. And then mind only schools. Mind is only three schools. Their presentation is mostly from more than two truths. They present mostly from three phenomena, mostly. But of course, when those, then they can be also, you know, in term of shama, dependent natures, you know, imputed nature, and the perfect natures phenomena. So those are three phenomena. They, you know, the perfect nature phenomena is the emptiness, you know, and the defendant natural phenomena are the those, you know, relative objects, and then imputed is that, you know, dualistic, you know, imputed by your mind, the subject and objects, the object that our mind impute, the ignorance impute to exist as though there is, you know, external object separate from the mind, you know, that objects. So their presentation is mainly from three, but when you kind of summarize, then, you know, the pure or perfect natural phenomena, the emptiness is the ultimate truth, then other two are the conventional truth. And then the mother makers. And so maybe we will focus more on the mother makers, the true truth. Can there be three truth? Third truth? No. Are you sure? One of my friend's grandfathers told him there is a third truth.
Is it a secret?
Yeah, because if otherwise you become enlightened immediately like this. If you understand the third truth. It's like this, you, quick path, so it has to be secret. No, it just reminds me, a friend, you know, just one of our just casual talk, I don't know how we started, but once his father told him, you know, sometimes we said, you know, two truth, you know, their truth, my truth. In every situation, you know, every situation, you know, there's two truths. The other say it is true, and we say it's true, you know, there's two truths. And his grandfather told him, there's a third truth, neither yours or the others. You know, both of you could be wrong, you know. And your truth is not truth, and the other person's truth is not true, but there is a third truth. No. So anyway, but even though it's not exactly we are talking about that truth, but it has a good point, you know. The wise wisdom of the grandpa. Yeah, in this case, there's no truth, you know. Any existence which not ultimate truth is conventional truth. Any convention, any existence which is not conventional truth is ultimate truth. So therefore, there is no other third truth. So the two truths are, you know, conventional or relative truth, and then ultimate or absolute truth. Okay. Then we will talk a little bit more, you know. Conventional truth is described, you know, existence, you know, that is the objects of conventional valid cognizers. And then the ultimate truth is the existence that is the object of ultimate valid cognizers. And ultimate valid cognizer is the wisdom that perceives ultimate truth or emptiness directly. Okay? So the object of the wisdom that realize emptiness directly is known as ultimate truth. And we'll talk a little bit more why is ultimate truth. Whereas conventional violet cognizer is, you know, our violet cognizer that, you know, perceive this flower as a flower, you know, that sound as a sound, that smell as that smell, whatever, you know, or different valid cognizer that perceive different. So those perceive those objects directly, and that objects of my eye consciousness that perceive this flower directly, you know, that is the valid as a flower, that's a valid cognizer. And the object of that is the flower, and that flower is the conventional reality. Just like true truth also, you know, there could be two valid cognizers, you know. va recognize and appreciate ultimate truth, and by recognize and appreciate conventional relative truth, you know, and observe each of them is those truth. So then, first, maybe we talk a little bit of conventional truth. Conventional truth, you know, involve around what we experience every day, throughout the day, you know. It involves all our day-to-day experience. It is about, involve our understanding, you know, the phenomenal appearances, how phenomena arises or appear due to many causes and conditions, and through appearance of those, or arising or appearing of different phenomena, different objects, things due to many causes and conditions, how each of them functions, you know. Different phenomena arises or being produced or come into existence by depending on many different, multiple different causes and conditions. Not only due to depending on many multiple causes and conditions, certain phenomena come into existence or arise or being produced, each of those objects has its own individual different functions. They have their own different functions, you know. And due to different functions of those objects, then it leads to different result, different effect. Some lead to unpleasant experience, some lead to pleasant experience, some lead to neutral experiences. Some of them hurts you or others, some of them helps you and others, some of them is so different effect we receive or others receive from those functioning of different objects. And so that is, those are part of the conventional world, conventional phenomena, conventional truth or reality. And part of those conventional realities, you know, is of course not only the physical world, but also the mental world of our sense, you know, senses and mental perceptions or mental consciousness as well, which also the valid cognizers also are part of that. And those are important because those valid cognizers distinguish conventional truth, conventional false, which is very important. If we don't have that valid cognizer that can distinguish what is conventional truth, what is conventional false, then we will not be able to distinguish between snake and rope. If we cannot make difference between snake and rope, then consequences of that can be deadly. You know, not being able to distinguish that, and then you think, oh, this is a rope, and you grab it, and that can be deadly. And what makes us able to distinguish that is that conventional reality, that conventional relative, that conventional phenomena, such as that the conventional valid cognizers. If there is no conventional reality, if only ultimate reality, then the ultimate wisdom that realizes ultimate reality does not distinguish that those things. You know? Is the conventional violet cognizer that is not the ultimate violet cognizer that distinguishes those objects. The violet cognizer that perceives the ultimate truth directly, the emptiness directly, that see all phenomena in one taste, same. See all same, equal, one taste. There's no distinguishing of, you know, in that mind, or with that mind, there's no distinguishing of, you know, subject and objects, you know, good and bad, you and me, snake and rope, snake versus rope, rope versus snakes, all of that. What it perceives, what it perceives, what it distinguishes, that all those objects or all these phenomena are empty of inherent existence, that's all. So therefore, you know, the conventional reality and understanding conventional reality is key for our functioning in our worldly world. And it is that conventional reality, and especially that that violet cognizes, that is able to distinguish all these different conventional truth and conventional forces, that kind of direct our everyday life. That is what direct our everyday life, you know. When I say fire, you know, that I shouldn't be too close. I have to be a little far away. With that, being able to understand there is a fire, and that the fire burns. And with that understanding, to keep it your distance so that you don't get burned. What makes that has is your conventional valid cognizes. Oh, I shouldn't engage in such actions. If I engage in these actions, it will bring me pain, suffering. It will hurt and harm someone else. The mind that is able to see that, understand that, that it is your, that kind of action, your that kind of behavior could or will harm and hurt others, bring pain to others. It could bring or will bring harm and hurt to yourself. With that understanding, with that, and through this such understanding, then we refrain or restrain from engaging in such actions. What drives us all this kind of behavior, conduct, actions from engaging in any kind of harmful actions is this violet cognizers that perceive the conventional reality. Is that conventional? It's not the ultimate violet cognizer that does that. Are we clear? Yeah? So it is what helps us from harming others in that way, what helps us to protect ourselves and protect others from our certain behavior and actions, is that the ability to see, you know, such action bring harms and pain, and not wanting to bring pain and sufferings. And that is those understandings, that awareness, that understanding is a conventional violet cognizes. conventional violet organizers. Also with that, we can understand the importance of that, how important violet organizer is, conventional violet organizers. Because sometimes we think, you know, I should just develop the ultimate violet organizer, because that seems to be the key. We hear the ultimate, you know, anything that sounds like ultimate, that is it, you know. And so we think this is what I need to get. And we might be so, might not pay as much attention to relative or conventional realities or truth and correct understanding of that and all of that. But when we actually try to analyze in our everyday, day-to-day life, in our functionings and our actions, is that the violet cognizer or conventional world that directs our life, you know? Whether we end up creating more negative karma, whether we end up creating more positive karma, you know, through those understandings. But also conventional phenomena or conventional or relative phenomena, truth is also deceptive. Deceptive in a sense, you know, the appearance that it gives to the mind that perceives it directly, you know, does not concord with the way it exists, the mode of existence. To the violet cognizers which perceive those objects, it appears inherent existing, that object as appearing inherent existence. But in the reality, those objects are empty of inherent existence. The way they really are, or the way their mode of existence, is empty of inherent existence, but to those mind, it appears as inherent existence, and therefore, in that way, it is deceptive. Then, of course, then in order to understand how is deceptive, how that appearance of truly existence is deceptive, to understand that, then you need to have understanding, the better understanding the ultimate reality. If you don't have that better understanding the ultimate reality, you wouldn't know it is a deceptive. If you don't understand the mode of existing, what's the real the way thing exists, what's the mode of existing, if we don't understand that, then we wouldn't know that appearance is a deceptive or not deceptive. And so that is why I was telling at the very beginning how each of those understanding will help each other. And without understanding one of them fully, you cannot have an understanding of others. Not only in understanding, also in terms of practice, you know, that one cannot ignore it, one of them, that those, you know, one need to integrate both relative and conventional truth together, even in the practice. Maybe we will discuss more. The ultimate truth and conventional truth are, I guess it might be okay to say that it's like a two sides of the one coin. Basically, both of them, they don't contradict each other, but they actually complement each other. They actually support each other. because of relative truth, there's ultimate truth. Because of ultimate truth, there's a relative truth. Without relative truth, there can't be ultimate truth. Without ultimate truth, there can't be relative truth. They're mutually dependent arisings. They mutually support each other, complement each other. In terms of their existence, as well as in terms of understanding. Your understanding of conventional reality shouldn't contradict your understanding of ultimate reality. Your understanding of ultimate truth shouldn't contradict your understanding of conventional reality, but instead it should complement and support each other if it is a correct understanding. So, you know, when we talk about the head of the coin, we are still talking about the coin. You get to know the coin better. And then when you talk about the tail, head and tail, the other side, you are still talking about that coin. You get to know the better of that coin. You know, it doesn't contradict understanding each other's side, but actually it helped to. And I like to say, you know, conventional reality is understanding of the objects or the phenomena, how it exists. Okay? Ultimate truth is same how the nature, how it do not exist. I can talk about this paper, what it is and what it is not. But I'm still talking about this paper, the nature of this paper. It is two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is what it is not. One way of looking at what it is. And when you understand what it is not and what it is, you have better understanding of the object as better whole. Maybe if we give example of the being, maybe that might be even better. And other human beings, you know, who he or she is and who he or she is not, you know. So when we understand both who he or she is, how he or she is, and who he or she is not, how he or she is not, we will have a better picture of that person. And better pictures and less chance of being misled and being deceived. And same, you know, when we try to understand the reality of any objects, you know, we try to see the both reality within that objects. And maybe we can talk a little bit more, maybe tomorrow. So, conventional reality is sometimes, you know, in scripture, the appearance is the conventional reality. In terms of appearance, as I mentioned before, you know, it is due to coming together of multiple cause and conditions, certain objects appear, certain objects come into existence or being produced or arise, and it has certain functions. That is the conventional reality. That is the fact of that object. That's the reality of that object. That's the nature of that object. And as it was mentioned in the sutras that I kind of read, you know, such as that the truth of suffering, truth of origination, truth of path, they all are part of the conventional realities. Without conventional realities, all this would not be possible. You know, all this diversity, you know. There are certain cause and conditions, due to certain cause and conditions, there are certain result which is sufferings, different kind of sufferings, different, you know. And those different sufferings are result of different negative actions or karmas, you know. Different contaminated experience, different contaminated, you know, pleasant experiences are result of different contaminated virtuous actions. Different contaminated virtuous action produce different contaminated positive experiences. You know, so again, all of this, all this, so many different diversity or different things, all these are conventional reality. As I mentioned, in ultimate reality, all in one test, in all in one. There is no diversity. So when the two truth come, then there is a diversity, at the same time is one. While there is one, at the same time there is a diversity. It's such a wonderful. But when there is only ultimate truth, then there is only oneness. There's no diversity. When there is only conventional truth, there's only diversity but not oneness. But when you have that, you know, then when they come together, it's two paradox together. While there is a diversity, at the same time there is oneness. While there is oneness, at the same time there is a diversity. Living together. Existing simultaneously, at the same time, without conflicting the potential. At the moment, the problem we have in the world is that, you know, not being able to find those simultaneously. Isn't that is big struggles, where you could have diversity at the same time, oneness. While you have oneness, at the same time, there is diversity without conflicting. So anyway, so I think we don't have so much time, but I can take one or two questions. Yes, please.
Oh, yes, well, I have a question. Going back to the three truths, you know, your truth and my truth. So with a conventional valid cognizer, how can you tell who's valid if your truth and my truth, we're looking at the same object and we see differently? What's valid?
It's always mine is true. You didn't know that? That was quite silly question. Absolutely, mine is always the right one. How can the other ones be correct and right? So that is a symbol. We all know that. No, you know. I think we might have to talk that from different, from different point of the being and karma, you know. In some cases, both can be true. Not only both, three can be true, four can be true, four. In some cases, it's not true, it's not widely recognized, you know. So it depends. One of the classical examples that is given is, you know, when you look at this liquid full of this in this cup, for certain beings, human beings, we see as a water. We experience as a water. That is conventional reality for us. But another beings experience due to their karma and other condition, they see as a blood pass, the experience, I say it, is not like they just see it and then if they try to drink it, it become water. It's not kind of some hallucination, you know. Sometimes with hallucination, you can see something else, but actually, when you do it, it's nothing to do with hallucination. But in that, to them, that is real. That is what they experience. To some, they see it as different. Again, something like nectar, they experience as that. So conventionally, who's right, they all see it differently, experience differently, which is correct, and all of them are correct in their own existence. Within the human existence, maybe if someone sees as a blood, maybe that might be a, maybe not widely recognized as, you know, within that existence. But with the another beings, with a different karma and other conditions, then so it depends on that kind of situations, I guess. Whereas if maybe, you know, I had some kind of, you know, the wild mushroom or honey, and then I see something, I said blood, you know, I see the blood, I might be afraid, whatever, but that is not widely recognized. That is hallucinated, you know, that's mistaken mind, it's not widely recognized. So, yeah.
So it's water.
So water in our existence, yes, to us human beings is the water. Yes, please.
You mentioned earlier tonight that ultimate truth highlights the deceptive nature of conventional truth. And I was just wondering, what does the
highlight
show, reveal?
Highlight, I don't know whether that, again, I don't know. What I said is, in order to understand that is deceptive, you know, that appearance is a deceptive, we need to have some understanding of the emptiness. Without understanding emptiness, it's hard to know that it's a deceptive. Because when we analyze the reality, the ultimate reality of the objects through ultimate analysis, and through such ultimate analysis, when we find that things do not exist inherently, and when you have understanding of that, that thing do not exist inherently, then that is when you have an understanding of ultimate reality, and that understanding then helps you, oh, this appearance is mistaken, even though that is not how thing exists, but there is that appearance. So ultimate understanding of ultimate realization helps to have a understanding of conventional reality of being deceptive. No, to understand ultimate conventional truth, you don't have to understand ultimate truth. But in order to understand something as existing conventionally, then you have to have understanding of ultimate truth. And there is a slight difference. So when you understand something as conventionally existing truth, then you understand it as something false. When you understand something false or deceptive, then to understand that as something as a false or deceptive, then you need to have understanding what is the real, you know. And so in order to understand what's the real, the real existence, then that is where the ultimate reality comes. Okay.